The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
This is Professor Shy Guy. I sing, play guitar solos, and make chiptunes, and you're listening to Nerdy Show.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Hex.
Hi, I'm Tony.
And I'm Kay.
And we have a special guest on this episode. It's Nerdy Show community member, Big Bad Shadow Man.
Hello there, folks.
Yay. I hope that was enough enthusiasm, because we're going to be real enthusiastic. This episode is all about Godzilla.
Yes.
And here's why. Because he's huge.
He is gigantic.
And he just had a movie come out, but that's not why. Because months ago, and over a period of many months, Big Bad Shadow Man, he said, I'm gonna support Nerdy Show because I like him. And correct me if I'm wrong here at any point. And I love Godzilla.
He doesn't like us at all. Or Godzilla.
I know that Nerdy Show's entirely listener supported, and so if I give him money, then they're gonna do whatever I want. And I'm gonna make him do a Godzilla episode.
I mean, we set those standards, so it's understandable that he approaches the
situation. We gave him the strings and he tied them together
But here's what he did that no one has done before. He said, I'm gonna take a microsode and I'm going to double it up. And okay, people have done that before. And then he kept doing it. And then he kept doing it until he created. He created
a monster.
Yeah, he
a giant monster.
I made a destroyer or a Hedorah of an episode.
Yes.
Smaller little bits, making one big nasty motherfucker.
A Hedorah? Is a Hedorah something that a good guy monster wears?
God damn it.
No,
only if they're feeling classy.
It would be the thing that would make Captain Planet piss himself.
There's very little that doesn't make Captain Planet piss himself, we'll be fair. I mean, Ted Turner's a scary man.
He just does it all the time.
He does.
I thought Hedorah was a good guy.
Is he?
But good guy monster.
Well, he was created like it's a, you know, the thing that has to do with the Earth.
Ecological.
Yeah, monster. Ecological He's, monster. Yeah.
He's green friendly, which is where Captain Planet comes along.
Tying it together for you folks.
So, Big Bad, actually, he created a quad length microsode, aka a full length episode. So we're going to be talking about Godzilla. We're going to be talking about the past. We're going to be talking about the present. And we might speculate on the future.
It's a good thing most of us have already seen the new Godzilla movie.
Yep, that's true.
I am excited to talk about it. I'm a big fan of Matthew Broderick's work. And I love Hank Azaria as a cameraman. This is perfect. I have been waiting to extol my love for this film. Why are you guys making those noises?
That's awful.
Because that movie is mostly frowned upon by a lot of people.
But we're talking about the HD remake, right? That's what we're here to celebrate?
There's a new one.
No.
Jean Reno was in it, right? Wasn't he?
No.
Jean the Professional? Yes.
That's something. That's all right, right?
Yeah. He was very professional in that film.
He had great bubblegum chewing powers.
So we are going to be talking about the new Godzilla film. If you're listening to this episode on the day it came out Friday prior. So it's just recently come out. We're going to do that at the end of the episode. So what we're going to do, don't worry. We're going to talk about Godzilla in all these broad strokes that you can totally enjoy. And then we're going to give you our spoiler-free review. And then we're going to really lay it into it.
And you're going to get to hear me make all those like, what noises? Because I have no idea what's coming.
But I saw it.
I saw it.
Yeah. I saw it.
And so that's what's
I
up.
Haven't saw it.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure I know what will happen.
So Big
pretty
Bad.
Sure Godzilla destroys a city.
If at that point you say, I don't want to hear this, I want to listen to the movie, that's okay. Well,
even if you want to watch the movie, you can do that too.
Just pause here.
Don't pause.
Do that later. Later. So Godzilla, am I right?
Yeah.
He's a hell of a guy.
All monsters.
Yeah. Now, Big Bad, you're a redonkulously huge Godzilla fan. You actually have been the creative force effectively behind a number of past giant monster related things that happened here at Nerdy Show, including our How I Met Your Mothra Nerdy Show Prime episode, where we talked to the guys behind Kaiju Combat, Simon Strange and Matt Frank, comic artist, as well as Eric Powell.
Yeah.
So when did this Godzilla fascination start?
When I was a wee little lad. And like most people, I went to school and kids were, they were big fans of Power Rangers. The idea of, you know, super teenagers fighting monsters and giant robots. It's like, seems sounds legit. Cool. I'll try to see if I can find it. But I had a hard time finding it when I was a little kid. All of a sudden, I come across a commercial, which I thought, oh, this might be the Power Rangers, because they were doing the whole super team fighting monsters. And they had a giant robot. The problem, though, was the giant robot was in the shape of the monster it was fighting. That was Mechagodzilla.
Ah, okay. So basically, you heard rumors of something called Power Rangers, and you knew roughly what it was, but you had no way of procuring Power Rangers for yourself.
Yeah.
These are the days before you could, like, Google showtimes for things. This was like when you're sitting there going through the cable programming guide, and it's like, shit, I missed the channel. It's got to cycle around again.
Yeah, and that was the thing. It was because at that time, it was during the 90s, they had this whole thing where there was like a Godzilla toy series called Godzilla Wars.
I think it
was like the only Godzilla toy series that actually featured human characters. And they were literally like Power Ranger type characters.
Huh.
Yeah, it was like a one set of movies that are the only continuous Godzilla movies. And I think I thought it was in the Millennium, but I could be wrong.
Actually, that series is actually called the Heisei. I finished watching a crap ton of that this morning. But
you win.
But that's the thing. They made a toy series that kind of went with those series of movies. And the thing was, is they build up Mechagodzilla as the ultimate super weapon. And it's like the idea of they make a robot based on the big baddie and it fights all the other monsters that are under that big baddie's rule. And it's like, that sounds pretty cool. And then I got completely confused because later down the road, I actually watched a Mechagodzilla movie and he was the bad guy. And somehow Godzilla was the good guy. That's how confused I was. And I was like, I need to know what the heck is going on.
Well, in general, Godzilla, when in its 60 years of stomping, man, it's chaos. Actually, that actually reminds me. Here's what you said to us when you initially requested this microsode. You said, this year marks the 60th anniversary of Godzilla. I would like a retrospective look on all of Godzilla past and present, and I would like to lend my knowledge of the King of All Monsters as you guys' monster correspondent. So there you go. Monster correspondent. Yep. Achievement
unlocked.
Official
title.
Yeah. Bing. I major in Godzilla, and I have a minor in Universal Monster Movies.
And actually, that sounds like an actual film school course set. I'm just going to say.
Yeah. Maybe at Greendale. Well,
yeah. Intermediate, like, city destruction. Yeah.
Godzilla came out in 1954, directed by Ishiro Honda.
Scored by Akira Fukube and special effects by H.E. Tsuburaya.
You know, I gotta say, for someone who's collecting Social Security, like, Godzilla is still... He's
doing all right.
Yeah. Like, he's still kicking butt.
I mean, he's put on a little weight in the new movie.
Yeah.
Fat bottom Godzillas make the rock and roll.
Well, that's the thing, too, is the people in Japan saying, oh, he's too big. If you look at the Heisei series, he's got thunder thighs.
Fat-bottom Godzilla, though. He's my favorite.
So it's not that Godzilla has gained weight. He's evened out. He went from thunder thighs to just kind of being more a pear shape.
He looks more like a linebacker compared to a sumo wrestler.
Yeah.
So this is hinting at a future Godzilla team-up film where he's part of the giant monsters football team, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Hey, he's a sports. He played against Charles Barkley.
Lost.
What if Godzilla made that booty clap?
I don't know.
I don't need a Godzilla twerking video now.
I do. Oh, I need that false. Right this moment.
That is the opposite of what I need.
Downvote, downvote.
It would be a nuclear booty clap.
Just here, make that ass clap.
Shockwave.
Spoiler alert, that's how the movie ends.
That's to speak of, he has like crazy amount of powers and abilities.
Yeah, because I know you would know the answer to it. Can you list off all the powers he has? I imagine it's kind of like when you talk about how many powers does Superman have and you like include everything from the Golden Age.
God, please don't.
It is like that. I mean, I can just go down through like his basics, the stuff that he's usually reformed for.
Currently, let's start with what are the basics?
He has atomic fire breath, or just atomic breath.
Zesty.
It's not fire. It's more of a beam of pure radiation.
Okay.
So he's a walking microwave. Gotcha.
He has regenerative capabilities. He can heal.
Wolverine, with you.
And he has some extreme strength.
Well, yeah.
But that's the basic stuff. But there's been parts where he's got crazy abilities. For instance, he once flew with his atomic breath.
Well, how's he going to, you know, catch up with Gamera with his rocket hooves?
My favorite one is the one where he rockets across on his tail.
That's what I was about to say, the tail slide.
He turned himself into a giant magnet once.
Hold on, what now?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
In one of the movies, when he's fighting Mechagodzilla, he turns himself into a giant magnet.
So he's Wolverine and Magneto. This guy's the ultimate threat.
How did he not get stabbed?
One of the more basic ones I forgot is just his resilience to mostly anything modern technology-wise. Bullets, missiles, artillery, anything that, you know, military has really doesn't affect him.
He got that Emma Frost diamond skin.
He is
not only more X-Men mashed up here.
No, that's what I'm going to say. This is the ultimate bombshell. Godzilla is not actually a giant lizard. He is just all of the X-Men merged into one. This is the ultimate plan of the Fox movie canon.
At one point, Marvel did have the rights to make Godzilla comics.
Really? When was that?
I forget what year, but it was probably between the 60s and 70s.
Huh.
This is why he's our Godzilla correspondent.
There's been 3 comic book studios that have actually been able to use the rights for Godzilla. Marvel, then there was Dark Horse did something that was really good that Toho thought, that is awesome. We're going to take that and put it into our movies.
Oh, wow. What do they do?
They created an organization called G-Force, which was the idea of a super task force with the sole purpose of just combating Godzilla. And
wow, I didn't know that we as Americans could be responsible for that. That's cool.
Yeah, they love the idea. And it's actually prevalent when the movie they introduce it, and they build it up pretty well. They even when one of the characters is going to become part of that group, they actually show montages of training and teaching the best ways of combating Godzilla effectively.
When the foot is coming down, move laterally. Do not move lateral.
Attack him from behind.
That's interesting that Dark Horse just continues to have this history of taking a already existing intellectual property and just doing really creative stuff with it. That fans and creators go, that was really cool.
If only they could somehow influence the Terminator or Predator series in a positive light. But the studios simply will not listen.
Mr. Plinkett, how the hell did you get in here?
And then recently, IDW has the rights to it. They've been putting out some good stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've been pulling in actual fan favorite ground level art types like Matt Frank.
With Matt Frank and Chris Mallory. They've been doing a lot of actual things that fans actually are liking a lot. Monsters are actually being more focused on. They're actually given somewhat of a personality, which is something that some people kind of don't realize, is that a lot of Godzilla monsters actually have personalities compared to other monsters that we have.
So Godzilla's kind of an autumn. He enjoys long walks on the beach. Is that what you're talking about?
He's more like the grumpy Clint Eastwood from Gran Torino.
Oh, so you're saying my portrayal of Godzilla and How I Met Your Mother was way off then?
Yeah, he's more like, get off my lawn.
Gotta ask yourself one question. Did I blow my breath 5 times or 6?
Yeah. Then you got a bunch of other monsters. I think one of my favorite is King Caesar, who is kind of a lazy cat. Because he technically is a cat.
Or a cat.
Yeah, he's a giant stone lion.
There's so many Godzilla creatures actually.
There's a bunch.
Gamera just seems easier to please kids.
Dragon dogs.
Oh.
Yeah, he's probably one of my favorites because he's one of the weird mystic ones in a series of a bunch of science fiction.
That thing looked like some kind of gremlin on steroids.
Yeah, that's the kind of one of the things reminds me of. He does look like a gremlin. He's one of those, lion dogs.
Neat.
And he's an old folktale monster, which is one of the things I like about Godzilla, is that you have a variety of monsters. You got crazy aliens, and then you got stuff like King Caesar or Mothra, which are spiritual creatures.
Yeah, I think that's cool as well. We were all really rooting for the small beauties to show up in some capacity in the new film. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Cosmos.
Yeah,
they got
Cosmos, the Shobajin, whatever you want to call them. God. I feel like they're Mothra's one of those maids. Things that as a kid, I never cared about them. But as I got older, I was like, that's kind of creepy. And it kind of works that some giant bug deities would have small little girls that would be her priestess.
It's just super weird. I just love how super weird it is. And also their catchy song.
It's just full of weird countries and stuff that they've made up.
In the earlier movies, they did a lot of things to try to not to offend certain countries, but at the same time, try to show them kind of, how helpless Japan was. There's multiple countries which were a combination of Russia and the United States.
Rosaliska, like, or Rosalika from Mothra?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Technically a major military power that had atomic weapons and did atomic testing.
There's a lot going on there. I mean, the commentary about the atomic bomb is inescapable in Godzilla. In fact, I was reading up on it and learned that his skin, the scales of his skin were originally designed to, the texture was inspired by the keloid scars seen in Hiroshima survivors.
Oh, wow. Like,
how fucked up is that?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, too, is a lot of people don't realize that out of all the Godzilla movies, the first one is, like, the most serious and somber.
It's the darkest
one, for sure. There's a lot of dark stuff, especially, like, in the original Japanese version.
Right.
There's this new series out called The Real History of Science Fiction.
Yeah.
Cap and I have checked this out.
And you may have heard John and myself and Claire Evans from Yacht talk about it last month in one of our MoogFest episodes.
There is an episode on aliens and invasions, and it branches out beyond just aliens and invasions to also include, like, monsters, because Jurassic Park is involved in it for one reason or another.
It's basically humanity dealing with another force.
Right. And so they actually start talking about giant monster movies, and they start off with
The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Yeah.
Ooh, good old Ray Harryhausen.
Yeah. And that apparently came first and helped inspire Oho to make
very directly
Godzilla. Yeah. it was a combination of Ray Harryhausen and King Kong.
Yeah.
Those two movies, you can see a lot of influence in Godzilla movies from those two.
Definitely.
So you'd think with King Kong influencing them, they wouldn't have fought. They would have been kind of buddies. There would have been like a ping pong match.
No. Godzilla's like, you know what? You may have come around first, but I'm the big guy now. You ain't nothing. You ain't nothing. Now,
I love that movie because of how tongue-in-cheek it is. It's like, it's one of those things where a lot of people try to do those big versus movies, you know, Freddy versus Jason and Alien vs. Predator, and they try to do it serious, but they usually kind of miss for certain reasons. The reason I love that King Kong vs. Godzilla is just because of how tongue-in-cheek it is. Kong's origin is that he's not actually like the denizen of Skull Island. He's technically this giant gorilla that drunk this magical or this mystical, some special berry juice that made him grow big.
Some fancy juice.
Yeah,
fancy juice. That literally gets them drunk. It's one of those things that's, he gets drunk and it's probably one of the funniest things.
So maybe King Kong is actually just an allegory for drunkards and like the world that they perceive that they feel bigger and added stronger levels to store up stuff.
And then they try to ask directions from a giant lizard and all of a sudden they get lit on fire and they have no clue why.
Sounds like an average day in the life of Drunk K.
Why am I on fire?
That's why you keep your asbestos handy.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, so, Big Bad, you no doubt know this left and right, but did you guys know where the name Gojira comes from?
I do not.
It's a portmanteau of the Japanese words gorilla, and Kujira, which it means whale, because Godzilla was originally described as a cross between a gorilla and a whale.
Yeah.
He does have a gorilla-like face.
That also leads to other monsters' names. For instance, Rodan is actually a combination of, there's two ways of spelling Petrodon in Japanese, and they combine them two, and what they get is Rodan. Or it was actually Radon, but because
that was too obvious, so they just...
Well, it was that, and also at the same time, at that time, America was trying to make people like, oh, radon's all right, it's an okay gas, it's not crazy.
America doesn't do that, I don't know what you're talking about.
We're thinking it's switching for
it's
oxygen.
Fine. It's, oh, great, there's a giant flying monster that can destroy cities by just flying by it. We can change the name.
We can't change the name, it's going to confuse people. Switch the letters.
Just one is enough.
The naming convention for a lot of the monsters is somewhat unique, and some of them I know, some of them I don't. For instance, I know Ghidra at one point, his name actually has some type of lettering of the word dragon, because he's the giant three-headed golden dragon.
So with Destroyer, did they just listen to Kennedy say, like, we gotta get this Destroyer? Destroyer!
Destroyer is actually a funny word. The funny name.
Well, yeah.
It is a funny name.
I love saying it.
Destroyer.
They actually call him Destroyer because they couldn't copyright or trademark the name Destroyer. Because
it's a word.
It's an actual word that's being used. And the idea is that the reason he's called Destroyer is because he was created by the one weapon that actually had any major effect on Godzilla, which is the Oxygen Destroyer.
So how does that work? I'm not familiar with this. This destroy all oxygen.
The Oxygen Destroyer pretty much was a super weapon created by a Doc Zarazawa, who I'm hearing a little, I know that you've seen the new Godzilla movie. I know someone who's in it. But Dr. Zarazawa was a scientist who was working with oxygen to try to do something great. But instead, he accidentally created a super weapon. And he didn't want anyone to know about it.
He wanted to destroy it.
Destroy it!
He wanted to, or at least find a practical use that wouldn't actually be used as a weapon. But when Godzilla shows up and starts wrecking the place, he has to use it, and it actually, in certain continuities, it actually kills Godzilla.
I'm not picturing how this oxygen-destroying weapon could be used in a non-lethal way. Nothing's coming to mind.
I know.
But I really want to see how that works. Like, anybody smell too much oxygen in here?
They're able to make food better. They could make fish bigger, get more meat from a fish, like use it as like a growth hormone. The thing is at that point, the original Oxygen Destroyer mutated some microorganisms and they formed together to make one big nasty monster.
It was doomed from the start.
And what's that one called?
Is that Destroyer? Is that what that is? The fish parasites?
Yeah, it's more like microorganisms just coming together to form one super monster.
Hey, that guy shot us with something. Let you know what? We can't stand it. Let's get together. Everybody, come on, bunch up.
That's technically how Destroyer comes. It's like, hey, we're a bunch of giant, weird crab monsters. Oh, great, the military's shooting at us. Let's come together.
Tony, did you depict the microorganisms as Teamsters?
Yep. Come on, man, everybody, bunch up. It's gonna be all right. Don't worry about it.
Let's cut to a track. But before we cut to this song, we got to tell you a little story.
Yeah, I'm working on a new project, and it's called IndieBox.
And it's amazing.
Thank you. It's basically a subscription service, like Book of the Month, but a indie game of the month. And the thing is, most indie games are exclusively digital in distribution. They don't have a box or anything to mail to people.
Or to just be cool, to wear like a game tuxedo.
It's like, you know, they've got all the retro pixels, they got that retro style, but they don't got that retro box, man.
Well, I mean, the issue is they just don't have the money for it. They do everything off of Steam, and Steam has revolutionized the indie game market. But
it leaves some things to be desired.
Right. You still can't have that box, that instruction manual, that kind of experience of getting the box for the first time. So what we do, what IndieBox does, is that we team up with developers. We make a box, instruction manual. We get a USB cartridge, fill it up with a copy of the game for Mac, PC, and Linux. We get posters, stickers, buttons, all kinds of stuff, all themed around the game. We stick it in this box and we mail it to people. Now, the game, I guess I can announce it, because we have mailed out all the boxes by the time of this recording.
Okay.
Ooh.
The game is this phenomenal Metroidvania-style game called Teslagrad.
Ooh.
Big bad. You sound like a Skeksis.
Yeah. I was going to say, that just sounds awesome.
Basically, you run around as this little kid in this massive technomancer kind of tower, and you run around collecting artifacts. Like, there's a glove that when you punch certain metals, it changes their polarity to being positive or negative. There's blink boots that allow you to teleport. There's a polarity cloak that changes your polarity to positive or negative. And there's also a Tesla wand, which zaps people. It's a really fun game. It's our first game. We also, when we looked at our soundtrack, we had enough room for one spare track. So we reached out to Norwegian chiptune awesome dude, Kubi. And we got him to do an original track inspired by the soundtrack. So what we're about to play with a world premiere is that track. This is Polarity by Kubi.
And if you want to check out IndieBox, it's at theindiebox.com. The fun thing about IndieBox is what you know is that you will get a special edition package for a game that is awesome. What you don't know until you get the box in the mail is what that game is.
Right. And so even if you get a game that you've already played that you already love, it's like, oh, I already got this game. Oh, now I have a once in a lifetime collector edition of this game that I wouldn't get anywhere else. That's still pretty cool.
Yep, everybody wins.
Yay, winners.
And seriously, Teslagrad is kind of a nice benchmark for IndieBox, because I've seen videos. That game is fucking phenomenal.
I am so proud that we got that to be the first game.
Holy shit, it looks amazing. So, I mean, if that's what you guys are leading with, I can only imagine the follow-ups. IndieBox is going to be the shit.
So, if you're interested, go onto theindiebox.com and get a subscription. And here, we now have Polarity by Kubi, a world exclusive.
Did you guys know that there's a dinosaur called Gojirasaurus?
No,
no way.
Are we talking about the real one or the fake one?
I actually didn't know that.
I don't know. I mean, you know, sometimes Wikipedia can be a pit of lies, but not often.
I was going to say recently, what was it? There was a dinosaur that was discovered that they named Gojirasaurus.
It's a coelophysid dinosaur. I don't know what that means. And paleontologist Kenneth Carpenter, who's a Godzilla fan, said, all right, this motherfucker's called Gojirasaurus. Deal with it.
I love that. That's the archaeology community. It's like, you know what? This is Gojirasaurus. Fuck you guys.
That's the beauty of being a scientist, folks. You get a name shit, and people have to deal with it for centuries. That was my favorite thing about Tesla, was that he named everything a Tesla. Like, all of his units of measurement. He's like, so this is the Teslagram. And the Tesla watt. how much does that weigh?
Mobile.
He just understood branding. Toho, the studio behind Gojira, is super protective. They've sued people for simply featuring giant monsters and stuff that have no direct correlation to Godzilla.
What, really?
They've sued Subway for a giant monster commercial. They sued Honda for a commercial with a fire-breathing monster. The Sea Shepherd Conservation Society named a ship Gojira to harass the Japanese whalers. But they renamed it when Toho started putting pressure on them. They call it the Bridget Bardot now. And man, they're nuts. In fact, when we talked to Eric Powell in our previous Giant Monster episode, How I Met Your Mothra, he talked about how his debut series, he was the creative force behind the first Godzilla book at IDW. And his original pitch was about humans living in the post-apocalyptic like society created by the giant monster wars.
The best way of describing it was pretty much road warriors with giant monsters.
Oh God.
But
that's the movie I want to see.
Yep.
His plan changed drastically because Toho turned him down.
Yeah. Oh. And it actually caused the book to suffer a lot.
Speaking of Powell, this is just probably a good time to mention it. Eric Powell is the writer behind the forthcoming Big Trouble in Little China comic that takes place seconds after the conclusion of the first film.
You see, I did not know that fact. I did not know how much I needed that book in my life.
I can't even imagine creative force more appropriate from the comics community.
They released spoiler of the first image, and it's that monster.
My nerd boner is rock hard.
I believe the term is sploosh.
They released the first page already, and it's the first panel, and it's basically the monster that was clinging on, ripping off the passenger door and jumping into the cab with Jack. That is the first panel.
But here's the pitch. They become friends.
Yes. Yes. That's even better.
He becomes Jack Burton's goofy monkey sidekick.
That's amazing.
Oh, God. And the wacky hijinks that ensues.
So this is the U.S. Archer comic we should have gotten.
Probably.
That's all I got to say on that.
the only person who could have done it better would be maybe W.D. Richter, the guy who wrote Buckaroo Banzai, who wrote the final draft of the script for Big Trouble.
I want that so bad.
Well, this one ain't getting changed. This one's happening.
Good.
So we'll link to where you can check out that that preview page and so on this episode's page.
I do love that Toho was so protective that they let that amazing 98 Godzilla movie
I know,
come out.
Right? Isn't that weird?
Actually, fantastic. That is kind of, I think, one of the main reasons why they become so protective after a while, because how bad that movie was.
They don't even really acknowledge him as being Godzilla. He goes either by Zilla or Gino.
Gino.
Yeah. So they won't even refer to him as Godzilla. And then he was included in Final Wars because he's on the box. He's got the little...
First of all, Gina, she's a lady dinosaur.
I don't give a shit.
I got to...
Damn.
Gino.
Gino.
Gino. Gina.
Gina. Gina.
Now, you guys don't understand. That was that whole city in front of me. I just had to go. I needed to lay my eggs, yo.
Jesus.
I know, I get the same way.
Hold my earrings.
hold them. Hold my fucking earrings. There's these fuckers in choppers and shit. No, that shit is going, Matthew Broderick, I loved you in that movie, but please move away. Move away. Those are my babies.
I have more of a Fran Drescher voice in my head. So Godzilla wearing leopard print spandex with big teased hair. And be like, oh, Matthew Broderick. No.
Can one of the two of you make that the episode art for this?
I think this is a team up effort. High five for team up. That is entirely happening.
Well, I was going to say, there's actually the main reason Godzilla came back after Godzilla 2000 and that was because of how bad that 1998 movie was. Toho went to meet Roland Emmerich, and Roland Emmerich was like, oh, yeah, here's the design of what we're going to use for Godzilla. And they, but from what I've read, it felt like they were so enraged that they came full circle. We'll keep our Godzilla, you go do yours.
And then it was a smash hit, obviously.
Clearly.
They had the Taco Bell dog.
It put Titanic to shame.
Doug and I both confessed to each other that we both owned in middle school the Here Lizard t-shirt. We both owned those, probably in XL.
No, you know what? I will say this for the film. The marketing campaign was fantastic.
I liked the thing like where they had the bus
this
ads.
This bus is the size of his foot. This billboard is the size of his left testicle. Which is weird because it was a girl, as we found out, and they were using that ad everywhere.
It smells like it, too.
One of the main reasons why they got that was, Toho has a set of design rules for people using Godzilla. It's 3 sets of dorsal fins. He is a dinosaur, which that's one thing that they screwed up by making him a giant iguana. He's supposed to be a dude. He breathes atomic fire. And he can't be killed by conventional weaponry.
I forget, how did they kill him in the 98 one?
He got trapped in a bridge, and they hit him with some missiles from a jet.
Conventional weaponry.
Normally,
conventional weaponry. We're going to take those rules and, just put them over here in the trash and then do whatever we want.
You don't understand the vision of Roland Emmerich. This is a far better film.
I'm glad that I don't understand Roland Emmerich. If I wasn't so convinced that Roland Emmerich was like possibly a refugee, like it sounds like a very American move. Like, nah, forget that shit. We're just gonna do whatever we want. Like, it's America, dream big.
Though to be fair,
killing her with a bridge, not exactly conventional.
We killed her with a bunch of rocks. What's less conventional than just throwing shit at her?
It was good enough for Captain Kirk.
I'm just saying.
Well, also, it's good enough to defeat, technically, Ghidra, the three-headed monster. It's like, the most terrifying thing in space. No advanced technology can defeat it.
Rocks!
Yet, two prehistoric creatures, a baby deities, are able to defeat it by just tossing rocks at him.
Seems legit.
They're like, hey, start juggling. We're just going to throw rocks. Just start juggling. And Gator's like, oh, I can't. I'm embarrassed. I'm dying of embarrassment. I'm going to go write my live journal.
Since he's got three... It was only made worse because of the three heads, one of them did know how to juggle, and the other two were just, like, completely
letting
him down.
But he didn't control the arms.
I was like, oh, God, why am I the middle head?
There's actually a couple of good things that actually came out of that horrible movie. One being the actual animated series that the people I feel who were behind that animated series knew a lot more about Godzilla than Roland Emmerich did.
So you're talking about the one that goes up from the depths, 30 stories high. Yeah, that one.
I've never heard of this.
No.
That's the Hanna-Barbera one. They gave him laser eyes.
There was a... God, I don't even know what station it was on, but
Fox. It was either Fox or
I think it was Fox. Mm-hmm. It was a Matthew Broderick Godzilla cartoon.
Never saw it.
Like, the opening credits ended with Godzilla like, climbing a city, and everyone like, heroic pose in front of Godzilla.
It was very similarly animated to, like, MIB.
Yeah. I think it was the same animation team.
Probably. Yeah, it was like everything. Like, I loved a lot of the designs in the monsters that they had.
I couldn't watch it in good conscience because that would mean that I would be supporting anything that came from that movie.
Yeah, but it was all right. But here's actually the thing I like more is that Toho actually at some point made that movie canon to the point where that movie is technically just someone mistaking a monster as to be Godzilla.
Ah. Yeah, that was in Godzilla 2000.
It's racial profiling, essentially, because they were just sitting there, giant lizard destroying
again,
the city,
the only person who actually thought he saw Godzilla was a Japanese sailor. It's like, there's only one thing that could have done that. It was Godzilla, even though I never actually saw it. I just saw the giant claws.
You know, Godzilla's continuity is multifaceted, very complicated, but at least at some point they tried to make it work.
The early movies have somewhat of a continuity, but it's kind of, they try not to. It's like, you don't need to watch the previous movies to enjoy this one.
Well, here's a thing. Godzilla's been technically, like, this is the fifth reboot of Godzilla, technically. And every time they do reboot the series, they don't make, like, a continuation out of the last Godzilla movie. They make a sequel based off of the first movie. So, like, the true sequels are, like, the reboot movies.
We have already had the good one. We just need to reboot it from there.
Yeah. At the end of the Showa series, like, they started moving towards making Godzilla less of a scary monster and more of, like, a children's hero.
Like Gamera, friend to all children.
Right. Like,
and that's why he started looking like a puppy dog.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
I got these big eyes. You got
I was watching Godzilla's Revenge last night, which is basically just a it's a flashback episode. So it's just a compilation of all the monster fights.
And best way to describe it, it is a fan fiction movie because it's all in this kid's head.
Yeah.
and he's best friends with Manila. And Manila can talk. And he sounds really dumb.
Godzilla says I have to fight my own battles.
Don't do drugs.
Pretty much.
I know I'm big and green, but don't smoke the big green.
Again, there's a lot of weird Godzilla movies.
My favorite by far, and it's the one that got me into like giant monsters and stuff like that, is Godzilla versus Megalodon. And it's not even because it was like a Godzilla movie. It was because I had it on VHS and then I saw the Mystery Science Theater riff of it. And then I fell in love with it. And I love Jet Jaguar. He's one of my favorite creatures out of the entire...
One of the things I liked about the IDW Rulers of Earth is that they give second life to a lot of those monsters that only get one shot in one film. And Jet Jaguar is pretty badass.
Looks nothing name. Like a jet nor a jaguar.
Okay, I was going to ask.
Cause... No, he looks more like Ultraman. But like more pointy. And he has... Or like mixed with the Michelin Man. So he
hold
has, like,
hold Ultraman mixed with the Michelin Man.
I am
picturing Ultraman who has just let himself go and he's like he's a giant monster. He brushes the crumbs off of his beer gut. He yells at Mrs. Ultraman for a second and he's like, I gotta go take care of a thing. And she's like, you don't never take care of the garbage. And he leaves and he's just got rolls. He doesn't quite fit in the suit anymore. This is who Fran Drescherzilla is talking to.
Oh, God.
Kay's showing us a picture now. We'll link to a picture.
He's got kind of a Jack Nicholson Joker face.
He's got a very angular, pointy face.
I've seen this thing before. That's a weird thing.
Yeah,
I am known to like weird things.
He was actually designed by a kid. Like, it was part of a contest.
Figures. Wah, wah.
I believe it.
And the thing is when they brought him out, the kid was really upset.
It's not my vision.
Other little known fact, and I don't, this is not founded at all, but this character is the Green Goblin costume from the Sam Raimi Spider-Man.
Yeah. Like, he does seriously, have orange and blue.
Like, seriously, pretty
much. Like Gator's that colors.
That face, the same kind of like ribbing shit on the arms and everything. This is Willem Dafoe.
Wow. I want to talk about the influence of Jurassic Park on all of kaiju films, mostly. And especially, like, you could see it very, very clearly in the 98 Godzilla. When they're fighting them raptor babies in the sports arena where they throw the balls around.
Clever girl.
Right? And in the amazing trilogy of 90s Gamera films, you could also see it.
Sorry. You said amazing and Gamera in the same sentence.
Have you seen these movies?
It's a joke. It literally is. Again, you have to realize there are good ones, but there was a lot of bad
ones. There's a lot.
I know.
Flashback to the Gamera movie marathon where we're watching to Shadow the bad Man. Ones.
Yeah, again.
Thanks to Shadow
we're
Man.
We're watching the bad ones and we're making fun of it. And then the first one of the trilogy starts. Everyone continues making fun of it. I'm like, but this is good.
Shut up.
Actually pay attention. And we start paying attention like, whoa, this is actually pretty good.
Sorry, everybody. This makes a really bad streaming, but we're into this at this point. Like, sorry, guys.
Watch us sit in silence as we take in the most unexpected, amazing Japanese
plot
films.
Twist. We enjoyed the movies.
Nobody saw it coming. It was like a giant foot came into the living room all of a sudden. Giant monsters tying it back around. Destruction.
And you know what? You still see the influence of Jurassic Park in the new Godzilla as well. Like, it's all pervasive.
I feel like they paid homage to it, even though they didn't want to. Like, it's like a begrudging nod. A
lot of monster movies, you show the monster right off the bat. They wanted to do the Jaws thing.
Right.
Or they don't show them that. But when they do, it's all worth it.
On that note, we're going to cut to our next song. And when we come back, we're going to give you the spoiler-free review of Godzilla, followed immediately by the well-delineated, spoilerific Godzilla review.
Recently, Overclocked Remix released a Turtles in Time-themed album called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Shell-shocked.
And one of the tracks is their rendition of Alley Cat Blues.
Alley Cat Blues. That's how it sounds in the game. They actually say the... Yeah, okay.
I was going to do the same exact thing.
Big Apple, 3 a.m. You want me to go through all of them? Prehistoric turtle sores.
Burying my shell in wounded knee.
Technodrome.
Alley Cat Blues.
Alley Cat Blues.
It's done by...
Hey, who put out the lights?
The track is called Shellocalypse. And it's
my toes!
My home, my home.
Tonight I dined on turtle soup.
Sorry, Hex.
That is by Omega Driver.
But I'm not sorry.
Featuring Jordan
Clark.
Clark.
Kent?
I can't even. I'm done.
Omega Drive featuring Jordan Clark.
And, power.
Alley Cat Blues.
Alley Cat Blues. Let's kick Shell. Here's Shellocalypse, guys. Guess what's coming up next week? Oh, did you guess? It's the Ninja Turtles 30th anniversary this month. So what? We're going to be talking to Steve Murphy, the creative team behind Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Adventures, the comic released by Archie in the 90s that was originally based off the TMNT animated series and quickly grew into the most intense, tightest continuity, in my opinion, best Turtles comic that's ever been written.
Wow.
For many people, that was the Turtles comic that we grew up on. So you look forward to that shit.
Should.
Yeah.
So is it time?
Yeah. It's time. Let's talk about Godzilla.
So,
what have we been doing for the past 40 minutes?
Well, we're talking about
the movie, the new one.
Godzilla, parentheses, 2014.
Okay, and, thank you. I needed the IMDb
So it's
credit.
A movie.
It's that is accurate.
Stuff happens in this movie.
Bryan Cranston's there. So is Kick-Ass.
Ken, what's his nobby?
Okay, here's my super quick review. This film features some of the best, most intense moments in giant monster films that I've seen. I mean, I haven't seen a whole lot by comparison to some of my compatriots here. But especially him. but it is absolutely incredible up to a point at which the film changes direction. And if you want to see giant monsters fight, you're going to see it, but you're not going to see as much of it as you want to.
See, and I was doing some thinking about it, and it felt like the director was still fighting for that original vision, and that snuck out in parts. Okay, so at the very beginning, it was really epic, and then something happens, and it changes. The entire feel of the movie changes.
You know, I'm really glad you guys are going to be spoiling this shit for me, because this is cryptic and confusing.
The first third of the film...
The first act.
...is a fucking amazing. Yes. It is worth the price of entry. However,
the movie could have ended there, and I went rough okay. ending, but
okay,
yeah,
no actual Godzilla, but okay.
Yeah.
I personally look forward to the fan edit that cuts out all the bullshit because it could easily be done,
yeah,
and would be amazing.
All right,
how much Godzilla is there? Because there's a lot of Godzilla movies out there that they don't actually feature him a lot.
Oh, he's in here.
He's in it enough to make it a Godzilla
movie. I mean, here's
movie.
The thing. I was telling Kep about this. Like, this felt like it was a movie about humans dealing with giant monsters. And the focus was more often than not on the humans. Human, 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 human.
As it should be.
And occasionally a monster. Yeah. Now, what I would have loved is a movie following giant monsters where every now and then you see a human. You're trying to figure out what are they doing to deal with these giant monsters. And you have to guess. Because you don't get that much human screen time. That's what I wanted. Because fuck the humans. I'm here for giant monsters.
If I
wanted humans, I'd go watch...
Pacific Rim.
Yes.
And if I were to, you know, compare the two films, I would say Pacific Rim is the better movie, personally.
Right. I wholeheartedly agree. As a whole.
If the entire movie had followed Act 1...
Then there would be
boom.
No question.
No
this,
question.
It would be, I would say this should be Best Picture.
I would rather have Riley... The guy who plays Riley be the guy who is
the main character
in Godzilla.
Kid.
Yeah,
I would have loved that.
It would have been far, like he's not a great actor, but he would have been far more engaging to me
than Ford,
whoever that guy is.
He was kick ass, and he's going to be Quicksilver. Yeah. In fact,
he's going to be a Quicksilver.
Oh my god, his glassy eyes!
I didn't recognize him. I was like, he's so hot and kick ass, but now I'm like, what happened?
Take away the mop top, and man, he just didn't have anything to work off of because that was just a cold performance.
I was confused.
Weird.
What's kind of nice is that we know then that this is not a bad actor who's going to be playing Quicksilver or Pietro or whatever the hell they call him because they can't actually use the name in Avengers 2. But
Right. Don't
go into Godzilla expecting a good performance out of Kick-Ass. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Nah. Or Ken Watanabe.
Ken, what were you doing?
Ken, what's his face?
Ken Watanabe. No, the thing
Watanabe.
Is, we agreed coming into this that we would not say his name correctly. I don't know why, but we made this agreement. So
Ken, what's his true role in this movie?
Ken, why are we talking about him? I mean, seriously.
Ken Watanabe, yes.
Okay. Right
whom here. I enjoy and respect,
Ken
but who
fork.
Is grossly misused in this film.
He is underutilized for sure.
At risk of saying any more, I think we should get into the specifics. Those of you who want to hear this, well...
Goodbye!
Thank you for sticking with us this far.
Yeah, so if you go at this point, pause and go watch Godzilla. If you don't care, hang out with us.
Yay!
And Big Bad, where do you fall in this camp? Do you want to hear us spoil the hell out of this film?
Oh, dude, I've had Godzilla movies spoiled for me from the get-go, so I'm fine.
By the way, I also want to make sure to mention before, this is a good time for it, the Wicked Anime's most recent episode did an entire speculation episode, bad information everywhere on the forthcoming Godzilla movie. You should totally check it out.
We'll I wonder how much of it is actually accurate. Like
at this rate, it could be.
How many times have they said Mothra was going to be in it?
Funny story.
Oh, Vlasta was going to be in it.
Funny story. So, all right. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
There was actually a Mothra reference. The kid had a terrarium. A terrarium, and had two stickers, and because one was on top of the other, it spelled out Mothra.
And there was like a cocoon in it, like a butterfly cocoon.
Wink, wink, nod, nod.
It was
all right. So first act was great. What the hell happened?
So first act.
First act is dominated by Bryan Cranston.
Yes,
which is exactly it. What it means.
But guess what? He dies. And that's where the film ends.
Right. So
like for the good part,
there's this nuclear meltdown basically that happens because one of the monsters that we don't see in this flashback from 15 years ago, because Bryan Cranston's working at this nuclear facility.
Yeah. That much I got from the trailer.
And then so this entire area over the 15 years has been evacuated.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the nuclear accident. But really what happened was that there was a giant monster that basically cocooned itself at the ruins.
And it was feeding off of the nuclear energy.
Okay. So the movie, it starts off with Bryan Cranston's son coming over from America to Japan to go, "Hey, Dad,
I'm bailing you out of jail.
Let's
stop sneaking in the quarantine zone.
Yeah. I'm going to take you home so you can meet your grandson finally."
So the Kick-Ass would then be, is Kick-Ass Cranston's kid or is
his
other character?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Ford is his name. And so the next day, Bryan Cranston's like, "You know what? I said we were going to go, but fuck it, we're going to the quarantine zone. You're coming with me." And the kid went, "Okay."
Whatever you say, plot, Dad.
And so they go in and it is this freaking amazing, like, post-apocalyptic, surreal feeling of like nature taking over.
It's very much inspired by the recent, you know, tidal wave disaster in Japan, and you see a city that's been abandoned for 15 years and overrun completely.
Oh, cool.
By wildlife.
It's just been abandoned, so
not Last of Us type stuff. I got you.
And the thing that everybody thinks is that it's radioactive, except it's not, because
there was no actual fallout. It was just a monster that was
right.
Like,
and all this stuff is cool, but I want to back up a little bit because the beginning of the film, where you see this excavation site, they find these, Ken Watanabe finds this ruins, they see this almost Cthulhu-like skeleton of this some kind of giant underground worm, and these two egg sacs, one of which is clearly hatched and the other which has not.
Watanabe has an assistant, and she goes, "Is this him?" And he goes, "No, this is much bigger." And so you're like, what's going on? Like, what kind of universe have we dropped into? This is amazing.
Basically, there's this whole organization that has been studying, got all the stuff from the trailer of like...
Yeah. The Monarch.
Yes. Yeah, Monarch. Like we were bombing things, we were trying to bomb Godzilla.
Right.
Yeah. So
instantly, it just builds this very rich universe that they're playing in, and it's just so...
And it's horrifying. Like, it's just the scale...
It makes you think that it's possible that this giant thing could be the monster. But it's not, like, because it was spoiled for me by the toy line about what they look like and how ashamed I am.
I got the prequel comic that just came out today. It actually kind of goes into, like, all the crazy, some of the other crazy stuff that actually happens in that world.
Well, that's neat. We'll link to where you can pick that up in this episode's page. I actually was unaware of that.
So Cranston is
the destruction of the nuclear power plant is horrifying.
That's one of the things that I got to say from the trailers. I had, because I still haven't seen it. I don't know what the movie feels like, but it felt like it could have been giant monster destroying a city, or it could have been a proper like horror film.
In this intro to the film, you get all the hallmarks of great
atmospheric horror.
Yeah, like you get scale, like seeing something just incomprehensibly bigger than you, horrifying destruction, very genuine loss and grief.
Because that was in one of the extended trailers, and even just watching that scene where he's seeing his wife behind the plate glass is like holy
raw emotion.
I've got goosebumps. It's incredible. It's just absolutely incredible.
And so he has this theory that they were lying all along. It wasn't some kind of reactor leak, because he feels it was his fault, because he was like basically
in charge of the nuclear facility
that killed his wife and has been.
He felt like it was his fault because he sent her down there.
Right.
Shit.
Yeah. So he's for these 15 years, he's been trying to get in there to get his data disks that are beautifully dated 1999 zip disks.
Nice.
And he's trying to get them so he can access his research to get a better idea of what was going on. So for these 15 years, he's been trying to do research on what exactly happened, because he's been blaming himself for what happened.
He's like, there's no way that it could possibly be my fault. Like, I have to find the real answer for this.
And so he's researching echolocation and all this kind of like stuff. He actually has over the years developed enough like information. He's like, this could be a creature. Like these pulses I saw could be something more. So he goes in there and you see this fucking monster hatch and it's crazy. And Bryan Cranston's screaming at all these people and nobody believes him. But then they realize that, no, this guy knows more than we do. And it's incredible.
And then he dies and the son shows not a shred of emotion about it.
He actually kind of feels put out by it almost.
Like oh.
Then they're in a briefing room, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, we need to know what your dad knows. He's just like, I never listened. End of scene.
He once told me echolocation. Does that word mean anything to you? Because I am dumb.
I am military. I am soldier boy.
Even after Bryan Cranston dies, like the power of that earlier portion of the film is still with you.
It carries the rest of the movie.
It's that atmosphere. It's that world building.
At this point, they team up with the American military.
Okay.
And NATO. That carries the rest of the theme. It has this very militaristic feel.
But like the most, it's vanilla bullshit Hollywood blockbuster military. It's just painfully tedious. And you watch the main character get bounced around in the most unrealistic way.
In the most Deus Ex Machina way you could think of.
It's sad. And then you get this amazing giant monster battle starts to happen. Like Hawaii, there's like Godzilla shows up. Ken Watanabe's like, Godzilla's the alpha male hunter. He's the predator. Earth was once bombarded with radiation. It was in that environment they survived. So now they've actually gone underground because they need to be closer to the radiation of the Earth. That's how they survive. And Godzilla is the alpha predator. He controls basically the
balance.
The balance. So these things are up here. So Godzilla is no longer dormant. Godzilla is going to fight these things. And that's all really fucking cool, right?
Yeah.
So Godzilla shows up in Hawaii. The first Muto comes. And you see Godzilla roar in all of his glory. And you're like, holy shit. Holy motherfucking shit. Shit's about to go down. I'm going to see so much shit happen right now. And then they cut to a happy scene at home in San Francisco with wife and child for a funny little thing where the kid's like, look, dinosaurs are on TV, where you can see fuzzy footage of Godzilla and the Muto fighting. Right when you think you're about to get everything that you've been owed by all of the buildup of this film, they take it away from you and blue ball you to all fuck.
I just got blueballed by your description, sir.
This movie is a giant monster cock tease.
Like, it is.
It's not the first time it happens. It's not the last time it happens where it just cuts to another scene of his stupid fucking family.
It's insulting.
I hate his family. I want them to die in the destruction sometimes.
That is unfortunate. Of course, it was likely budgetary restrictions that led to
No.
Here's the human plot.
You got it. No.
For the rest of the movie after Bryan Cranston dies.
I need this justification that it was they didn't have enough money for the CG Godzillas.
No, I'm fairly certain the studio put their foot down and said, you can't have monsters fight all movie. That's ridiculous.
Did they see... I was going to say, did they see Pacific Rim? But then Pacific Rim didn't do what it should have. So
Pacific Rim had more kick-ass giant CGI monster creatures fighting than this had by a landslide.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sad now.
So here is the human story. Riley 2.0 wants to get back to the Olsen not twin and save his little Hispanic child.
Like you do.
So they want to be reunited because it feels so good. However,
he somehow
keeps getting intertwined back into the military thing. He's like, I'm in the Navy. I dissect bombs or some shit. And they're like, we could use you, even though you have no expertise in this type of bomb. Let's get him on board.
Yeah, it's important for you to be with the plot device at all times. So whatever it takes, man.
You have to be conveniently there to save the day, quotation marks heavily.
At this point, the other other monster's awoken.
Yeah, right. There's two Mutos. There's a lady and there's a man.
So they found two pods
parasitic
in the original excavation site.
Yep.
One ran away, found Japan, and settled there. The other one seemed dormant. So this is a dormant thing. So let's take it to, but it's radioactive. So let's take it to our
Yucca Mountain
radioactive waste facility. This is where we find out that it was actually radioactivity that it was feeding on to awaken. So by taking this creature to the radioactive waste facility,
it's like, oh, you brought me breakfast.
I got a cute name for the Mutos. They never formally named them. I want to call.
They did.
Did Muto. They?
But well,
no, that's what
no,
they
no,
are.
Muto is kind of like their
classification.
Calling them kaiju.
I want to call them Goldeneye, right? Because they got sparkly golden eyes, and just like the Goldeneye satellite, EMP's out the ass.
Nice. And so it woke up right outside Vegas and tore it apart.
But think about this. Ken Obi-Wan Kenobi, he's spent a lot of time studying these monsters. He was studying the dormant one for a long time.
Yeah. They said they vivisected it.
Yeah, they did. Like, I don't understand how, like, I thought maybe it didn't have wings because they vivisected it and, like, they chopped it up and it was supposed to be like a science project gone wrong. That would have been cool. Right. That would have been a cool thing to do with it. But no, it's just because it's a female. It's the big one. It's bigger. It's got the egg sacs.
Yeah.
All that gross shit.
While he might have studied them, I think he studied the script more, and he saw the page where he
really?
Said,
"Really?"
Because
he had like 10 lines.
Here's a crime. They took a gifted actor like him, and they said, "All right, so here's what you're gonna do. You're an expert in this shit. Okay, cool. So to get to talk science stuff, and like, no. We want you to wander around with PTSD, basically the whole film, just looking concerned.
He is severely underutilized in this movie, and it makes me super sad.
And so he gets the idea, and he relays it very poorly. Hey, so. These are like gods. They need to just duke it out because we ain't doing shit.
So one of the 10 lines he has, his most important line, it sounds like.
Yeah. And all of them are in the trailers.
That's exactly what I was... God fucking damn it. Okay, well, all right.
We got the monsters with the best fucking fight scenes ever.
Yeah, incredible. And, absolutely incredible fight scenes, finally, after two major cock teases.
I'm flailing my arms the entire time. I've got my, like, fists clenched in, like, anticipation.
And we got the humans just taking up screen time.
Oh, it makes me so mad.
Literally. So rooftop gawking.
Basically. And then it ends because, you know, Godzilla wins. But
he wins in such a victorious way. He literally vomits radiation down its neck and rips its head off.
Now, here's my thing with
that. That's my favorite part.
Here's the thing with that. So, as Big Bad Shadow Man said, it's not atomic fire. It's really pure radiation. What do these fuckers feed off of?
Radiation.
Wouldn't we just be, like, supercharging these fuckers?
Well, not, well that's like saying, them. Like, what's Popeye's fat friend?
Wimpy.
So it's like saying Wimpy feeds on cheeseburgers, but if you shove enough cheeseburgers down Wimpy's neck, he's probably going to die from so much cheeseburgers.
That just shows your lack of understanding of Wimpy's physiology.
Which is fair. From what I'm hearing, there is an amazing first act.
Yes.
There's
lots of good bits.
There is a cocktease second act, which probably still has some good cinematography. And a brilliant payoff.
I wouldn't say it's brilliant.
No. Yeah.
I think the movie is very confused about the direction that it wants to go because it started out super serious. It went into action schlock for like the middle part. And at the end, King of the Monsters.
And despite taking itself very seriously, it is ultimately extremely cheesy.
It is. Yeah.
On TV, they're seeing Godzilla wake up and walk into the ocean. It says, King of the Monsters. - savior of our city ?
The pacing was so confused after the first act. In the press screening, there was press, but then it was also general audiences, most of which were like general populace, normal folk who'd been pulled in from like radio deals to get tickets and so
on. They don't know things. They're innocents.
But you could feel them having the same blue ball, weird disappointments. You couldn't hear it, but you could feel it in the room.
I could physically hear it. Like I heard somebody's breath brush my ear. They're like...
It gets so weird. It gets so bogged down with bullshit, and there's so many inconsistencies after that point.
Now, here's the thing. The way I gauge how much I enjoy a movie is, A, would I want to see it in the theaters again? If not, would I want to buy this movie? If not, would I be willing to rent this on Redbox, or am I just going to wait till it's on Netflix, or do I not even care
Or do
anymore?
I just pirate it?
And pirate still, more energy than Netflix, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Where does this fall on the hex scale?
I'd go see it again in the theater, just for that first act.
It's better to see in the theater than it is to rent it or watch it later.
Now, here's the thing. I'd want to go see it at Point Orlando IMAX.
Right, yeah, where you're going to get that sound. Because the sound in the theater we saw was fake IMAX. Right. It was weak, but man, you want that serious sound system.
When Godzilla roars, you want to feel it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
the
I would
sound,
be...
It was muted, but the sound effects were really great.
Like, I would be willing to see this movie again and get that actual full-on... legit IMAX experience.
And like I said, it is like the first act is worth the price of admission, and you will see some cool stuff eventually, but be prepared for frustration, right, guys.
And if it's like, should I go 3D or not?
I feel like I was severely friend-zoned during this entire movie. Just like, yeah, no, not having it. I'm sorry, I really Thanks. Like you, but we're just going to be friends for a little while longer. I'm like, but you're really boring and you talk about military stuff all of the time. And I just want you to stop. I don't care about your family. I just want to fuck you. Please.
Sounds a lot different from most of the Japanese ones where they have the crazy, cool sci-fi.
Well, the problem, like, I really, yeah. And then that's a problem is, like, I think this movie could have benefited from
a healthy dosage of mad science.
Yes. Well, most of the movies follow either scientists or reporters anyway. They very rarely focus on the military aspect of it. So,
and if they do focus on the military, it's like the ones that are piloting the giant robots.
Yeah, they're humanized. Like, there's no humanity inside of Riley other than he wants to. That's his name now. I'm not even going to like hide it.
Poor actual Riley.
Sorry, Riley. I actually like your character a lot. I'm doing you a disservice.
You want him to be your drift compatible partner.
I do. I would drift compatible him.
That's a t-shirt right there. Hey, baby. You and me are on the same wavelength. I think we're drift compatible.
No, you have to say it with terrible grammar, too. So I would drift compatible you.
Bring me your Jaeger. Not the shots. It's all right.
Man, don't come in! We'll be busy for a while!
Yeah. And we're back to Fran Drescher.
That was more like the Jaeger shot thing. It's like, man, where's my protein powder? Shots!
But yeah, that's my take. I would be willing to see this movie again in the theater. I enjoyed it.
I would watch it again.
I would see it the first time in the theater. But I wouldn't pay $15 for it.
Or yeah. However much movie tickets are for IMAX 3D.
I am genuinely waiting for the fan edit because I think this film can be fixed.
Yes.
It has lots of potential.
Yeah. Like, it seems like if you cut around the bullshit, it's so cut aroundable because they're so stuck in there for no reason.
My favorite is that it gets to this point where Godzilla's coming, so the water's receded. It's about to like crash over, uh-huh. And all the humans have run, and there's a dog tied to a tree. And so the dog is freaking out and starts tugging at it. And Doug said, for that fan edit, I'd cut it before it shows the dog breaking away.
having even heard it, I too would love to see this film, even spoiling and having all of you vent your frustrations.
I want you to see this. I want everyone to see this. Like, that first act is just so amazing.
And everything I've seen in the trailers, Godzilla looks like he's brilliantly represented. Not all the time, but in terms of a realized giant creature that is fearsome, and he's got the atom breath, which I needed.
Super afraid that they were going to make him like the Hollywood hop around, like more athletic and more agile, like than he should be. And he's not. He's grounded. He's got a fat bottom for a reason. And I was saying, like, he looks like he's been asleep for about 50 some odd years, and he's got a pot belly, and he's like, I'm too old for this shit. And he just comes out of retirement, and he's like, you fucking kids, get off my lawn. And then it's like, rips off its head and goes back to bed. That's like, what it looks like, and I like that.
Doug put it best last night when we were talking after the film.
Better than
said,
that.
Yeah.
For like the first half of the movie, he was literally afraid of Godzilla. Like, Godzilla actually invoked fear in him. And then when he got the idea that Godzilla was on our side, he's like, oh, okay. Nah.
Some of the later Godzillas, they do a good job of making him the bad guy, but at the same time feel something for him without him being...
He's an anti-hero.
I don't feel bad that they're trying to kill him, but I will cheer for him when the good guys are failing and he's kicking their ass.
I mean, throughout this entire film, like, you definitely have this feeling of utter uselessness of man against these creatures. At best.
Good.
And that's when it would have made sense for Ken What's His No Face, like, to just come in and say that line where he's like, just the let him duke
of,
it out.
The
like,
folly of man
okay.
is thinking that like, nature is in our control.
But they waited too long for that
part. No, because he pitches, he's like, hey, we really need to just sit this one out. And the military's like, I can't take that as an option. And literally he just goes, okay. Well, that's all I got. All I got is for a plan, do nothing. And I'm like, the fuck kind of scientist are you?
He wanders around gazing at his shoes like a dejected Charlie Brown the whole film.
Na, 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 na.
I'll also see that fan edit.
Like, there's this whole crew of scientists and specialists that were studying the thing for fucking 15 years. And all of a sudden, they're like, who do you want to take with you? Oh, the jarhead and the paraplegic. Like, they're the people that I want on my team. Forget all the people that I've been working with for a decade and a half. I just want those guys. Oh, one of them died. Well, I guess we'll ship the other one to Honolulu, where the monster mysteriously pops up.
All right, so that's been our review of Godzilla. Big Bad, thank you so much for requesting this quad length, not a microsode anymore, full episode. If you would like a microsode, all you have to do is contribute to Nerdy Show. We are an entirely listener-supported podcast network, and we rely on you. But if you send us money, we send you cool stuff in your email. And you also get the opportunity at every $100 mark. If you're the person who pushes over that limit, you get to decide what we talk about. So we've had some recent contributions in this month of May from Berto L. Khan, Julian Wowanowski, Caitlin Kruger support us. And she said, keep up the good work, everyone. And then first time donor, Matthew Tahiri, he said, after so many episodes of awesome, I feel compelled to contribute. Sorry, it can't be more right now. Also, Ghostbusters Resurrection. Also, The Nerd Groove. Subtext, I love you guys.
I like that guy. He's funny.
And we love you, Matthew. Thank you so much for contributing to us. It's okay. Any amount. Any amount means the world to us, and make sure that we can continue to make podcasts and stream music on Nerdy FM and all that good stuff. And remember, guys, not only do we need to make our monthly goal of $300, which covers all of our basic support costs, but anything you push us over that, that means that we can reinvest it in things like better video equipment and other cool stuff. If you like buying things on Amazon, you should follow our links from our front page to Amazon, because anything you buy from following that link that you wanted anyway gives back to Nerdy Show.
Yay!
Woo!
Also, you can find our episodes on SoundCloud. If you don't know what SoundCloud is, it's like YouTube, but for sounds. So that means Nerdy Show is now more easily shareable. And if you like something, you can like comment directly at the time mark. And it'll be like, ooh, oh man, this was so funny right here. Or ask us a direct question about things like, what did you mean when you said that? And we'll respond. And then
we'll have reference. It's important to have reference.
Right, right. And then finally, tell your friends. If you got friends who aren't listening to Nerdy Show and you like Nerdy Show, what's up with that?
I mean, seriously, you can't hang out with those people
anymore.
Are they
really friends at that point?
I try to get all my friends to listen to Nerdy Show all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We love all of you. Thank you so much for listening. Hex, what's taking us out?
What we have is a rendition of Blue Oyster Cult's track Godzilla.
The immortal classic.
Immortal classic. But by our local pal, Cyfride.
You know, I've heard this track before. You listeners are in for a treat.
There's nothing else we could really end this episode with. We needed to end it with this track.
Yep. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Hex.
Bye, I'm Tony.
Bye, I'm Kay.
And thanks so much, Big Bad.
And I'm the Big Bad Shadow Man.
Here's Godzilla by Cyfride.
And a terrible sound, he pulls the spinning high tension wires down. Helpless people on subway trains scream bug-eyed as he looks in on them. He picks up a bus and he throws it back down as he wades through the buildings toward the center of town. We'll be right back.
on Tokyo Street. Fill the screens, touch a free and giant lizard feet. The crowd of norms and the army both tremble in fear. Ain't no Roger Rick here, shit just got real. Now you chumps know the deal, ain't nothing bigger than this. No one showed us what it is besides vile and piss. Perfect shot with all we got, be just as well if we miss. Because whatever Zilla wants, he got the world in his fist. And whatever's in his way, he'll just break it in two. With all the effort, me and you, putting a tie on our shoes. Nothing left that we can do. History shows again and again how nature points up the folly of man.
History shows again and again how nature points up the folly of man.
Oh, hey, you made it to the end of the episode. Well, I've got some sexy secret things to tell you. Not really too secret. I do say them at the end of every episode. But if you liked what you heard, it is imperative that you follow my every word. First, I want to thank you for listening to Nerdy Show. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows in the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend, rating and reviewing us on iTunes, shopping at nerdyshow.com/store, or, most importantly, by directly donating to the network. Any size contribution gets you exclusive Nerdy Show outtakes, dramatic readings, images, and other crazy stuff, and lets you participate in our monthly support drives. Just go to nerdyshow.com/support to chip in. But if you really want to level up, find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming. Just visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more episodes of Nerdy Show, as well as other fine programs, community forums, videos, articles, and more, head over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show podcasts via the iTunes Store, and for the latest news, follow us on all your favorite social networks. So to recap, tell a friend, donate to the show, and connect with the entire Nerdy Show Network crew online. We're glad to be your home for authentic nerdy entertainment.
Can we make a song that goes, "Fat Bottom Godzillas make this rockin' world go round"?
Yes.
You rock that Tokyo with them dorsal fins, you gotta know. Fat bottom Godzillas, they make this rockin' world go round.
That's the end of my musical expertise. You see him coming across the sea, and he's coming to your land. Gonna rock you from Tokyo Bay. I don't know.
You're onto something.